Welcome. This is the Leaders Commute podcast brought to you by Acuity Business Consulting and produced by Business Radio X. I'm Jess Villegas. The Leaders Commute podcast reflects on the dynamic of recalling past experiences that persistently return to us over the commute of our lives and prompt us to acknowledge their influence on how we think about business and leadership today. The commute theme is intentional. Past episodes have referred to what we have collected, delivered, and mapped in our life's journey. Today's episode, The Fog of Score, refers to the fuel we choose to use when working to execute a strategy. My guest today is a highly valued colleague, Dr. Gilberto Moreno, Principal of Prestige Consulting Services. He'll join me later in this podcast as we use business topics as a pretense to talk about our mutual love of basketball. Let's get started. Thank you for listening. And perhaps you are even doing so on your actual commute.
Magic coming out of the backcourt. Turns around McDaniel. He's down the middle around Ellis. He bounces the ball under Worthy, and he's got two more. They need timeout, and they call it. Worthy has scored as many points as he's ever scored in a game, regulation or not.
His team is trailing. Pass out front, stolen by Scott. Scott lost it. Here comes Magic to pick it up. Magic's in deep, and no left pass to Scott. Slammed up.
Strange.
Ball to Magic Johnson going the other way, and Reed's with him stride for stride. Magic puts it under to Green. Green's reverse layup.
Magic Johnson was one of my favorite players of all time, but I can confirm right now that I have never coached him in my life. It was halftime of our YMCA basketball playoff game. The situation was not promising, and I sensed a team-wide resignation to the apparent inevitability of a loss. We were down 28-13 against a team that was seeded higher and were collectively bigger and stronger than any of my scrappy Blue Devils. I searched for the right combination of declarations that the team could embrace for the second half. We were definitely in moral victory territory. After all, this was a team of overachievers that never expected to have a winning record, much less get to the playoffs. But with 16 minutes left to play, rationalizing losing to one of the best teams in the league as an honorable way to end the season was a message that did not hit the mark. So, I scrolled my inventory of pep talks to launch us into what could be our final half of basketball. A group of highly invested preteens waiting for me to reveal the grand strategy was surprisingly similar to what I often experience in the conference room, but I felt more comfortably equipped to handle that pressure than the down by 15 with time running out pressure facing me now. I worked through one message, then another, but in the end could only muster the wholly unoriginal and completely unsubstantiated, "All right, team, we have them exactly where we want them." I presumed I and the other coach, Mr. Riley, had at least one thing in common: to spend time with our sons by having them play on our respective teams while exposing them to life lessons associated with team sports. For almost 15 years, I received my lessons every Saturday on the outdoor, sun-drenched cement courts of Liberty Park in Cerritos, California. Though not directly on the beach, they were in the path of a constant cool ocean breeze frenetically making its way to the inland desert, fueling our endurance and charging our batteries for extended hoop time. The Liberty Boys were an extremely close cohort of friends, brothers, cousins, sons, and the occasional stray spectator, gathering to joust through interplays of weak call and got next, all a prelude to the main event of pizza and Coke at the local Straw Hat. Every week, the camaraderie, buried in a reprise of trash talk, hard fouls, and high fives, was a highly anticipated sacred ritual violated only by a rare instance of Southern California rain. The most impactful lesson was the realization that five individuals, along the spectrum of the superstar to the moderately talented to the supporting cast, each had opportunities to shine if they were selfless and well-aligned. This was good news for us perpetual supporting cast guys, content to feed off the occasional 20-footer or a nice pass behind the back. But as I moved into my volunteer coaching career, I realized how living at this end of the spectrum affected my coaching style. Because I saw myself as just a supporting cog in a bigger machine, I tended to attract players that viewed themselves in the same way. That is, necessary and highly committed, but short on height and talent, both of which I am told cannot be coached. So, on this day, down by a significant margin, I had few options for crafting a comeback plan. "Coach," David said, "what do you mean we've got them where we want them? Those guys are giants, and they can score any time they want. I don't understand why they're in such a huge hurry to score." They were giants. Even Billy, the point guard, who happened to be Coach Riley's son, was almost as tall as our biggest player. I had to admit I was aggravated hearing Coach Riley's constant thundering and yelling at his team to push the ball, when they could just easily walk it up, pound the ball into their biggest guys, and score at will. I had to bet that he knew this, but elected instead to run his own version of Showtime Lakers of the 80s. And on this team, Billy was Magic Johnson. I'm sure I was also jealous, in part, because I love those Lakers. Even from the nosebleed sections at the Fabulous Forum, the excitement generated by Magic, Kareem, and Worthy was palpable. But also, though he seemed disinclined to appreciate it, Coach Riley had a couple of strong game plan options at his disposal. Push the ball or pound the ball, either of which made his team formidable. All I had was an idea, which was to fight fire with fire, or, in this case, fight speed with speed. So, I instructed our guards to stop impeding their team's quick progress up the court and to instead get behind Billy and chase him up the floor as fast as they could every single chance they got. This decision seemed like a gift to them as they scored the first two baskets of the half. But eventually, it had the effect of tiring Billy while forcing the rest of his even bigger teammates to work harder to keep up. Whenever we had possession, I would yell, push the ball, my sarcastic attempt at Showtime, disguised in an encouraging, strategic dictate. Their creeping exhaustion paved a steady chipping away of their lead, creating a fog of frustration about how to respond in this unfamiliar situation. With 2 minutes remaining, we were down by only a few points, and Billy had long abandoned his father's insistence that he keep pushing the ball. No matter if he ran or crawled, the team was too exhausted to execute. We caught and then passed them with less than a minute left in the game. The final score was 41-39.
And when they get it, boys, that's when they go on offense. That's when they go to them. And don't forget, we're going to pick it on one tackle they've got this week. We're going inside them. We're going outside them. Inside them and outside them. And when we get them on a run once, we're going to keep them on a run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get them on a run. We're going to go.
Leave it to the great Newt Rockne, a football coach, to try to tell a basketball coach what to do. To leverage past impactful experiences, I utilize an evolving context methodology. That is, the knowledge, competencies, and skill set we built at the various junctures of our careers can give new context and meaning to a past experience. Here's an example. For many years, I recounted this experience as one of a dynamic conquest. Coach A has a superior team, knows it, and maybe even flaunts it. Coach B surveys the landscape, eyes darting, brain cells churning for adjustments to keep his band of overachievers in the game. Coach A sees a shift in the momentum and pushes his team to keep doing what they have been doing, but do it better. Coach B wins and is celebrated for his nimble and strategic mind, one that unlocked the key to vanquishing a heavily favored Goliath with an innovative four-dimensional game plan, the perfect story complement to chicken wings and beers. But over time, as I took a broader view of things, my great coach version of the events began to fall apart. In a previous podcast, High Noon, Full Moon, I referenced the need to step back and see more of the horizon in order to get a more objective view of what we might perceive as victory or failure in the short term. There is nothing in my coaching history leading up to this game or since that suggests some sage understanding of how to coach a successful basketball team. Here's the evidence. The fact is, my team, overachievers though they might be, won only two more games than they lost. My chase them down the court strategy was born out of pure reaction, pushing me down the only path that seemed feasible in that moment. And to say it was my strategy was generous. It took David to point out to me that the other team seemed in a great hurry to score, even though it was unnecessary. This helped me to finally think differently about the situation. My team was a squad of players that just wanted a place to play and have some fun. But an unexpected taste of success compelled me, if not necessarily my team, to become more competitive, albeit after the fact. Unfortunately, attempting anything after the fact typically means there are just as many things dictated to you as there are things you choose to do. Finally, if the game had ended just 1 minute sooner, we would have lost. 60 little seconds. That is the accidental difference between infamy and glory. Eventually, with more information and a lot of additional context, I was able to put a new lens on the entire experience. I wondered why a couple of reasonably bright coaches found it so difficult to make timely adjustments within their basketball organizations. The value proposition for my practice, Acuity Business Consulting, states that leadership teams are often challenged with how to translate their talent and resources into exceptional and sustainable performance. Acuity demystifies this challenge by surfacing actionable clarity and providing execution expertise in the areas of strategic design, financial management, operational excellence, and leadership development. The essential message is that mature leaders are typically not challenged to understand what level of talent and resources are needed to achieve an objective. The task may be difficult, but not necessarily complicated. The hard part is to cut through the fog, prioritize the right things in the right order, then execute. Fog forms where conditions allow for it. Those are warm, moist air passing over cool surfaces, and water vapor condensing into tiny water droplets that remain suspended in the air. Regardless of how we choose to commute, fog does not change the location of our destination on the other side, but it can distort what we believe to be the best paths to getting there. That distortion, or organizational fog, results from the lack of strategic alignment in our businesses. Often, we understand lack of alignment to be the result of leaders not communicating well or individuals not getting in line. And these can be apparent manifestations. What it does not easily account for are impediments difficult to spot in the daily battle of managing our businesses. For example, is our strategic intent fundamentally sound for its product, market, and operations life cycles? Is our financial posture, our particular assemblage of resources, compatible for our specific objective, such as making an acquisition, selling a business unit, expanding or contracting operations, or launching a new product line? Do our opportunity management regimens allow for appropriate reflection, a wide range of perspectives, a balance of short and long-term considerations, and the ability to say no as often as we say yes? Have we harmed our capacity to deliver by not recognizing what is slowing organizational velocity, which weighs time, resources, and talent? I believe Coach Riley and I suffer from the lack of strategic alignment. I don't think it would mind if I called out some of the results of our fog. First, we had a strategic vision of our respective teams that was incompatible with the way we constructed them. In my case, it was more a random assembly of kids who thought it might be nice to play for a low-key, soft-spoken coach. Recall from my Liberty Park scripting, these were exactly the kinds of players I attracted. But as a competitive element entered the equation, neither I nor my players were prepared for that unexpected tension. Coach Riley clearly intended to have his talented but big son be featured in an offense that was more conducive to smaller, faster players. He managed the tension well until the one time it was stressed in an unorthodox way. Second, neither of us had a rainy day fund. In other words, once we found our resources as constructed were not getting the job done, there was no reserve of ideas or appetite for a plan B. One might argue my decision to begin chasing Billy down the court was a plan B, But there's a difference between plan B and reaction. I could have just as easily decided that we should play our biggest guy at point guard because that idea seemed to be working well for the other team. Coach Riley, while watching his 15-point lead steadily slip away, continued to the end imploring Billy to push the ball. There was no apparent plan B. Third, we were not managing energy in our organizations in a way we could most effectively deliver on our missions. In his excellent book, Organizational Physics, The Science of Growing a Business, Lex Cisney relates the first law of thermodynamics in terms of conservation, which tells us that at any point in time, the energy available to a system is finite. As far as the Blue Devils, I was not managing energy at all. Because I did not make the decision to speed up soon enough to execute in a fast and efficient manner, we jumped into an undisciplined scramble at the start of the second half and expended extraordinary energy hoping to catch up before time ran out. When Coach Riley elected to use a strategy of speed when it was unnecessary, he forfeited the leverage he had to conserve energy and remain strong to the end of the game. In this respect, slow time would have been a better strategy than showtime. I have shared with many organizations what I believe are the several conditions that can contribute to organizational fog and offer them from the perspective of how leadership might contribute to them. They validate incongruent objectives. For example, they might espouse teamwork, but in practice encourage the opposite behavior by rewarding individual achievement only. They honor inauthentic information, elevating the standing of the irrelevant or unimportant, leading to flawed analytics and wasting the organization's physical and intellectual capital. They compartmentalize resources by siloing individuals and information, making it impossible to address high-leverage challenges in a holistic manner. They are primarily transactional and view constituents as they do their physical assets. That is, as things to be managed and abided rather than truly accepted as partners integral to overall performance. They are inattentive, lacking capacity to assess what has brought it to this current state or what might result going forward. Also, there is no acknowledgement of potential blind spots and no clear permission structure to address challenges in the environment. They militarize the culture in a way that stiffens positions, builds territories, rationalizes mistakes, and creates defenses to make sure that nothing gets in or out. They worship shortcuts. There are times when speed is required to address challenges, but if it is the default paradigm, motivation to build sustainable solutions erodes. One last thing. Validation as a feedback mechanism is a great way to signal us when we are off track towards a desired result. But my recounting of the great coach version of the experience exposed me as being more concerned about what others thought of me versus how I performed. Too often, leaders seek validation as emotional food, a fleeting, short-term satisfying of the ego. Constructive feedback is what clears the fog and informs the organization. In this respect, it becomes fuel to get us over the ups and downs of the roads we navigate and which sustains us, even when recognition is sparse. Seeking validation as food is another element that creates fog in the system. It also means everyone else decides when we eat. I'd like to introduce my colleague, Dr. Gilberto Moreno. He's a gentleman that I've been working with for several years, and he has shared some of his basketball stories with me, so I'm hoping he's gonna share one with us today. Gil, it's nice to have you on the show, and welcome.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Jess, and love your basketball analogies to how they connect with business.
I remember you telling me about one of your stories recently on, I don't remember exactly how you told it, but the way I heard it is that you were essentially going against your coach's wishes and doing what you want because you wanted to play basketball.
It was senior year in high school, and it happens to be a key basketball game against a rival in town here in El Paso, Texas. And I had decided that I wasn't physically feeling very good, that I may not even play much in the game, but decided to just wing it. Lo and behold, before I knew it, everything that I was throwing up towards the basket was going in. Just to date myself, prior to three-point shooting and three-point scoring. Lo and behold, something that I never thought would happen happened, and ended up scoring 30-plus points. And much to my surprise, that never happened again, but it was a gift of something that just resulted unexpectedly.
From my story, Gildy, you are exactly the kind of player that I was not looking for. I wanted a bunch of mediocre guys who were going to execute on a brilliant game plan. So I'm glad I didn't meet you all those years ago.
I think I fit more of the style that you had, and it brought back memories of just the enjoyment of, and maybe part of the lesson is enjoyment of not only the sport, but the camaraderie and being able to work with each other was something that I enjoyed. There was certainly no follow-on to a high school career into college, but still maintain some strong relationships with individuals that we used to play for. It's funny that you connected with Magic Johnson, because it reminded me of a quote. I think Tony Wheeler came back. It's, ultimately the magic finds you if you let it. And somehow in your team, albeit overachievers, you allowed them to let the magic come in, and you weren't able to play for them, but they were able to deliver and even realize maybe a dream that they hadn't foreseen.
I wanted to spend a little time talking about some of the material I covered, and I'd like to let the audience know here that Gil is extremely aware of much of this material. A good bit of it refers to work that he and I have done together, and so he's uniquely positioned to speak on some of these things here. But before we do that, would you mind just telling us a little bit about what you do at Prestige Consulting?
25 plus years after leaving an IBM career of 17 years to have a practice that essentially focuses on what we call the four P's, anything having to do organizationally with people, a lot of planning work, a lot of process improvement work, and a lot of policy work. And it's a way of articulating a desire to essentially help organizations realize not only where they are, but more importantly, strategically, what is their intent? How do they plan to push forward? And how do they build and take advantage of opportunity that relates back to the products and services that they offer?
Somewhere in my podcast here, I made reference to some of the circumstances that pointed to us not being well aligned. And I tried to script it in four areas. They were really based in areas of strategy, finance, when I made some reference to not having a reserve, management of opportunities and capacity to deliver. And I know you and I together have developed a methodology called the 1x4 method, which essentially assumes that most businesses are going to have issues that are going to fall squarely into those four areas. Maybe it's the Pareto's rule of the 80% being covered by 20% of their attention. And I was wondering how you felt, maybe what kind of job I did about trying to relate what was going on with this basketball team and taking the big leap to what organizations face, and if you saw anything there that was helpful.
One of the things that I think emerged in that discussion is that you have to be ready for the unexpected opportunity, that to the degree that you're able to prepare for it, that many things that happen in relationship to serving in the business world and addressing client needs, the need to be able to respond and build some resilience is really key and important. That resilience allows some adaptability to take advantage of the opportunity. So it requires flexibility, really a way to take comfort in taking a risk in being able to even modify and adapt the offerings that you have, and then having the confidence that things will work out in terms of being able to relate to an opportunity. I firmly believe, and I like a quote that talks about, with success comes the opportunity to excel at the next level. And in many cases, the fact is that you were there, your team was playing there at a basketball game, you had a deficit, and not unlike what happens in the business world, a lot of opportunity unexpectedly will emerge. The question is, how resilient and how adaptable are you, both as individual leaders, but as an organization, to be able to address? So I think that all of the previous pickup games and basketball playing and being able to do that prepared your team to then react to the opportunity that emerged. And unlike the reality of what happens in the world of business, in many cases, there are things that may surprise you. You may be surprised with what it is and how you're able to deliver. But the whole idea is that, I think it was Wayne Gretzky that said, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. Being able to get to home plate, being able to bring up a bat, or being able to get to the free throw line, all the sports analogies, you need to be ready to act and react to the opportunity in the situation.
Gil, one of the things that has resulted for our work, and I know we've had opportunities to work with large and small businesses, and particularly with your IBM background, you're no stranger to sort of what happens in large organizations. But of course, since COVID, much of our expertise has migrated towards trying to work with smaller businesses. And recently, you and I had a conversation about what were some of the takeaways or some of the challenges for small businesses that consistently impede their growth. And one of the things that really stand out to me is that because they're small, you could take a sort of a victim mentality on, right? Everyone's bigger than us. I don't have enough people. But I think that one of the benefits of being relatively small is that you can be flexible and you can be nimble. And I'm thinking choosing to be nimble means choosing to adapt to the circumstances around you. And the thing I like about the basketball analogy is that if you've got five guys going down the court, and one of them is me, and the other one is the next Magic Johnson, he may get the shot, I may get the shot, but what's really fascinating is in a span of about 5 seconds, you have to make decisions. Are you going to go down court and take advantage of the confusion and the chaos and people trying to get set up? Or are you going to go down and set up? And I think a lot happens in a small business. But a lot of businesses that you and I have talked to, I've seen have been stuck in acting, wishing they were a bigger company, and then acting like they were a bigger company by moving slowly and not making decisions quickly. Is that something that that you think resonates with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that in working with smaller businesses, we have learned some attributes or some behaviors associated with especially a small business owner, such as the idea that many small business owners spend too much time working in their business as opposed to on their business and committing a sufficient amount of time to thinking about not only strategy, but thinking about not just short term, but longer term where they want to go. And as a result of that, they become the enabler of everything that happens in their business, as opposed to developing talent or finding other ways to be able to satisfy the needs that they have. And eventually, what that translates to is not only developing a strong culture, but a strong, for high-performing organizations, the three key ingredients of not only the right culture, but the right set of what you mentioned, competencies as well as the right leadership. You don't become a good free throw shooter unless you practice free throw shooting. You don't become a strong defensive player unless you practice that. The nice thing about the basketball analogy is that you never have five players with the same level of talent and the same level of expertise. That's why you need a point guard. That's why you need inside people, and that's why some people are, you know, their contributions may not be points, it may be rebounds, whatever. Not unlike in a small business, especially, the role that individuals play, especially owners, may be that of a utility player and being able to do that. But the idea that you have to be the source of all resources is another, I think, often seen challenge or mistake that we see in small business owners in being able to not only develop and build internal capacity by doing the outreach and making connections with other small businesses or other partners.
You know, Gil, when I was putting this podcast together, I'll typically, you know, run it by my, you know, people that I care about, including my son, Justin. And when I was telling him about the story, he said, well, you know, Dad, you actually forget, you actually did have some decent success as a basketball coach. And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, don't you remember that one guy came to you and said he needed someone to coach an AAU team? And of course, I didn't even know what an AAU team was at the time, but what he really needed was somebody to babysit 10 guys from four different high schools who didn't want to do anything except shoot three-pointers. And I thought, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. And that team, we would spend 2 hours doing nothing but fast-breaking and doing three-pointers. And I said, what we did is I rolled a basketball on the court, and for 2 hours they ran back and forth. Then we went to the game, and then we blew people out. And then finally, we lost to a team that did it better and faster than us. So I'm not going to claim that as a success, but I will at least say I had the good judgment to accept the gift that was given to me. I want to ask you one more question about Prestige, Gil. Can you just tell me some of the projects that you're working on now? I know you're doing quite a bit in El Paso, and you've brought me into a lot of projects out there, and then you're coming out to Atlanta quite often. Is there any project that specifically you would like to talk about in El Paso that you're working on now?
One common denominator that we're seeing as an area to address, whether it's a small business, whether it's a profit or a nonprofit, just about every organization's an outgrowth, I think, of the impact that really has surfaced is the need to be able to manage talent, whether it's attracting, sustaining, and developing talent seems to be a common denominator. And for a business owner, the amount of time invested in building talent, sustaining talent, and developing that talent appears to be key and important. But a dimension of that seems to continue to surface, regardless of the type of business that you're in, profit, nonprofit, educational institution, and some of the other clients that we have, is really the manifestation of creating the right culture that allows for everybody to consistently apply the right leadership skills to the right situations and assume that role and responsibility. Many organizations that we deal with are looking to the executive leadership or the management team to come up with all the answers, when in fact it's the frontline people that many times have solutions for that. And so the idea of not only making sure that people understand what their roles and responsibilities are, number one, number two, that they understand how they're going to get measured. But the third piece, how do they plan to enhance the value that they bring to the organization is a big opportunity. And that includes, by the way, the owners and the executives. The idea there is being able to then really nurture. It's all about people and about people developing solutions to people.
I appreciate your time joining me today. I appreciate your friendship and your expertise and your professional perspectives, and really enjoy teaming with you on projects, and look forward to when we get a chance to interact again. So thanks a lot for joining me.
We need to make an Atlanta basketball game.
We're going to try. All right, well, thanks so much for joining us on the Leaders Commute podcast, presented by Acuity Business Consulting. If you would like to reach out to me, you can do so at area code 678-644-9311 or email me at jess@acuitybusiness.consulting. You can catch a new episode every month here on Business Radio X, or you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you enjoy your favorite podcast. Until next time, I'm Jess Villegas, and you've been listening to The Leader's Commute on Business Radio X.